welcome to the ghost gig. Are you sitting comfortably? Then let's begin.
And then it began.
Good morning.
I think I've said that before. Sorry, everyone.
You do. You say it every episode. It doesn't get boring at all.
That's good.
Or annoying.
That's good.
At all.
I would hate to be tedious.
Yeah. Well, you're not, obviously.
Hooray! Nor are you.
Welcome back. I'm not. I'm perfect. Welcome back, everyone.
It's okay, because I'm adorable.
Welcome back, everyone, for the fourth time. Hope everyone's good. We're good. I'm just... found this morning that my iPhone may kill us both, but you know.
It might, but it probably won't.
Yeah.
So
the screen's lifting up, the battery might be swelling, it might cause a fire. I'm going to go get it looked at today.
Yeah, we're doing that shortly after this.
Yes.
But if you hear a blind panic,
if you're shrieking, screaming,
that's why.
It's in the other room, so it won't get us first. I dropped my iPhone about 3-4 months ago and the screen popped off, so I think it's probably that, to be honest.
It probably is.
But who knows? I'm going to go get it looked at. So that's going to cost me a lot of money.
It's not a really new one. We should be okay.
Anyway,
it'll be fine.
Anyway, the real horror of life.
Absolutely.
We're doing a song episode.
We are.
And the comfortable sort of, you know, horror aspect of fictional horror, which is nice and safe.
Cozy horror.
You've done the song for this episode, haven't you?
I have. I did this one under your request, and it was under her instructions.
Yeah, well, I really wanted to do this. Such a fun song, but I just didn't have the time, and I was running around like a crazy blue-ass fly.
Either one of those, and, yeah.
Sometimes you have more time, sometimes I have more time.
Yep.
This week you seem to have more time, so I was like, can you please record this song?
I did, which was nice.
So
it's rare.
Let's hear it. I've not heard it yet.
Okay. Well, I mean, you've heard other people's like good versions.
I have indeed.
Okay. Lovely. Okay. Do we say what it is now?
It's called The Devil and the Plowman. If you play it first and then we'll have a little info on it.
Okay. I'll just do as I'm told, everyone. I'm sorry. Otherwise, she gives me that look.
We are getting married and I think he's in training. Yep. He's in training to become a husband.
Here's a song about a scary wife.
There was an old farmer in Sussex did dwell, and he'd had a bad wife, as many knew well.
Oh, little day.
Devil, he came to the old man at plough, saying, one of your family I must have now.
Oh, little day.
Now it isn't for you, nor yet for your son, but that scolding old wife that you've got at home. Take her, oh, take her with all of my heart, and I wish she and you may never more part.
Oh, little day.
So the devil, he took the old wife on his back, and he lugged her along like a peddler's pack.
Oh, little day.
Trudged along till he reached his front gate. He says,
here, take it, an old Sussex chap's mate.
Oh, little day.
There was 13 imps all dancing in chains. She up with her patterns and beat out their brains.
Oh, little day.
Two more little devils jumped over the wall, saying, turn her out, father, she'll murder us all. So he bundled her up on his back again, and to her old husband he took her again.
Oh, little day.
I've been a tormentor the whole of my life, but I was never tormented till I met your wife.
Oh, little day.
And now to conclude and make an end, you've seen that as women we're strong, even when we get sent to hell we come straight back again.
Nice. Did you do that all instrumental yourself?
I did.
Oh, really nice.
I did.
I like it.
Oh, but that's rare because sometimes you hate my songs.
No, I don't. What do I hate your
song? No, you don't. You don't.
I don't, guys, by the way. I think a lot of people think that poor Vince is downtrodden and abused. He's not.
No,
I don't
not.
Hate his songs. It's a good song, and I really like what you did with it.
I'm glad you did the last verse. It seemed like, I know it's not the traditional lyrics of the song, but I found that version and thought, actually, this is better than the original version. And it's, as we've just had International Women's Day, let's get you to have the last word, because the wife doesn't get any say in this song.
Well, we had a deal, didn't we? I did that and you put in some silly voices.
Yes.
For the voices of the imps and the devils, which is when I did this.
I don't know why you looked at me and thought imp, devil.
This in a concert a few years ago with the folk band. And we all had like a verse each, and the people who did the voices of the devils and the imps were like, dinner, father, like that.
Yeah, well, I understand why.
Yeah. Cool. What did you think? Did you enjoy it? It's a good song, isn't it? It's very funny.
It was fun. Yeah, the story's quite cool.
Yeah.
In a daft kind of way. It still does lean a little bit on that. When I was doing it, the vestigial toe little low little day.
Oh, yeah, yeah, like, yeah.
But,
yeah.
Okay, fine.
And a fiddle-dee-dee and a hey diddle diddle.
Hey nonny nonny.
It's, you know, English / Irish folk music. But, you know, a lot of songs we cover is going to be that type, because we can't cover songs that are in copyright. So
no, that's true.
But yeah, I've always enjoyed this song. Obviously, it doesn't paint women in the greatest light, so I know what you've done at the end is appreciated. But yeah, basically, the devil comes to the ploughman. He says, I want a member of your family. And the ploughman says, oh, please take my wife. Please do. And the devil says, I shall take your wife. And he pops her on his back like a peddler's pack.
Thanks very much.
Thanks
Picks
very
her
much.
Up, walks off.
And basically she torments him to the point where he can't stand her anymore. And he gives her back.
Oh, God.
I've been a tormentor all of my life, but never was so tormented till I met your wife. And then I think she's quite proud of herself.
I think
she?
So.
She's
I
like,
think
well,
so.
Even hell can't. I'm such a bad bitch.
I should have kept the original lyrics for reference here, actually. I don't remember what the original last lyrics are, but it was, again, from the husband's perspective or something like that, or maybe the devil's, but he just thought, nah, this is, let's give her something here, because it's funny.
I might even have it here. One sec.
Oh, that'd be cool.
It's a long old song.
It is a long song. It's like 9 verses or something.
Yeah. Oh no, gosh, sorry, these are so many. There's a lot of verses here.
Oh, okay. You got alternative versions.
Yeah, folk songs.
Yeah,
if they get sent to hell, they get kicked back again.
Yep.
Yeah. And now to conclude and to make an end, you see, a woman is worse than the men. If they get sent to hell, they get kicked back again. To me, farala dila. Yes. Day, which I've always had problems saying.
Honestly, I've struggled with that. So I got really angry.
Well, it's
almost
an Irish
thing,
isn't it? It's Irish, isn't it? When I was doing my, I worked with people with dementia, and I was working with an Irish lady, and she kept asking for all these songs, which were, you know, great songs. But I was like, I can't say that. What is that? And this lady would correct me. Thankfully.
Well, that's good. Between the two of you, you got
because, you know, all these Irish place names, they'd be like, what's that one? So yeah, it's a very entertaining song. Probably could be with being updated now. So
absolutely, it would take an updating pretty well, I think.
Yeah. The tale of a shrewish wife who terrifies even the devil and the demons. And this is an ancient and widespread song. There's hints of it in the Hindu faith, coming back from the 6th century. In an old fable collection.
I did not know that.
I know. And then it's travelled, it's gone through Persia and through almost every European country. Mm. In early versions, that's a school near where I used to live. That's weird. The farmer makes a pact with the devil and hands over his wife in return for a pair of oxen.
Right.
Fair trade.
Okay.
Vaughan Williams got the present valid from a Horsham shoemaker and bell ringer, Henry Burstow.
Oh, Horsham, eh?
Who whistled, we're not too far from Horsham. This Henry Burstow whistled the song to him, and he kind of took it down there and then.
Fair enough.
And also, whistling is a familiar way of calling up the devil. Hence, sailors dread that whistling may raise a storm. So you've got a little connection there to a sea shanty.
Nice.
The song was recorded in 1928 by Bill and Belle Reed, sang The Old Lady and the Devil, which sounds familiar. I'm guessing that's like an old blues. If it's 1928, what are we like, blues?
And
it was also recorded in a British anthology of songs made in the USA, And this was including stuff like My Bonnie Lies Over the Ocean, which I've also heard rock and roll versions of.
Yeah, yeah. There was a couple of rock and roll versions of this song, actually, I came across in my initial scouring of the world. And they were quite cool, actually. I just didn't want to quite do that.
Yeah. So as I said, it's been recorded all over the place, this song. Jean Ritchie sang The Little Devils in her album back in 1952. And this was the album singing the traditional songs of her traditional Kentucky mountain family. Why do you want to put traditional? How many times do you want to say traditional?
I was wondering that the first time before you started clapping.
It does say that.
Just so you know, guys, everyone, I'm going to have to leave that in because of the way she cackled during that. No, I have to. I can't edit that out.
So, age-old song, a humorous tale at a wife's expense, and it exists in many different forms. Did you say you actually found one where, I know we put my vocal in at the end, but did you actually find one where it was a female who did turn around the vocals to be more?
Yes, there was one other verse. There was another artist. I would be able to pull up her name, actually, if I had prepared my brain. Kim Lowings. Lowings and the Greenwood.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
This is her version of the last verse, because I thought it was just better. It was funnier. Yeah.
So give that a listen, guys.
Yeah, absolutely. Give her. She's got a few versions, but I don't know the artist. But yeah, I liked her version a lot. I liked about this song is it's definitely a kind of a daft party song.
Yeah,
like this is definitely for guys sitting in a pub or tavern or wherever and just whinging. Yeah.
In 1916, Cecil Sharp collected this song from a guy called Uncle Jason.
Excellent.
Uncle Jason Ritchie. And Uncle Jason was a celebrated party singer, and he had a fabulous rep of songs all in his head. He didn't write them down. He'd just go to parties.
Nice.
He'd sort of just walk in to a party like a one-man entertainment that was a thing for centuries before radio was invented. They'd just hire someone to walk in and spout songs, which in a kind of way is being like, you know, it's a bit like a pop singer, isn't it?
It's exactly that.
Yeah.
And it used to happen in the US as well, but they became bluesmen.
Yeah, of course.
You just had to learn loads of stuff and just know how to play it.
Apparently, when Cecil Sharp collected the song from Uncle Jason, he made a mistake in the notation. And his whistle on the fourth note is too high. And it's written down wrong, apparently.
I will say I didn't necessarily copy the melody perfectly, to be honest.
So apparently Cecil Sharp made a mistake, which is like a big deal.
Oh, no. Well, I mean, isn't that quite well known? He did quite a few.
Well, I don't know, is it?
Doesn't matter, but that's a different conversation. It's fine.
But yeah, so I mean, there's so much info on this song. It's a very interesting piece.
It's a really cool song.
Yeah.
In a daft kind of way. I don't feel like even the people who wrote it were being very serious. I don't think it should be taken as particularly as an assault on wives generally. I think people just like whinging.
Yeah.
Whinge feels like the appropriate tone for this. It's not actually complaining.
No, it's a good, it's funny, and of course, Sussex song, or it turned out to be
this
Sussex song.
Was a Sussex one,
yeah, which is very near us, and that's how I got to know it, because I was in a sort of a folk celebration concert of Sussex a few years ago. So this was in here along with loads of other really cool songs.
Sounds like a good day.
I can't believe we've not done it before. So I was like, oh, it's perfect.
It is, yeah.
Cool. So if you are interested, guys, have a listen to all the other different versions and have a little research into it. There's so much information on it. We would not have time to look at all of it. But yeah, are you ready for some stories?
I would like some stories. I feel like this is a good story moment.
Okay. And the devil's always an interesting subject. We have looked at the devil before, of course, with Robert Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
But here we have some people who have encountered the devil in different ways.
Okay.
Are you ready?
You're not going to go Fall of the House of Usher here, are you?
No, but that's a very good series.
We just finished that one, and the devil depiction of that, she's just really cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, sorry.
The devil is not a woman in these, because, you know, that would be.
That's okay, because God's supposed
outrageous.
To be, God's supposed to be a woman, so that's all right.
Well, if God existed, of course she's a woman.
Yeah.
Right. Are you ready? Here we go.
I am ready.
Let's begin. Lucifer, Satan, Beelzebub, Iblis. These are all names used for the same entity, the ultimate bad boy, the devil. Thanks for the sound effect.
I wasn't trying to make a sound effect, I was just responding. I'm very sorry.
He is the enemy of all humankind, and his image appears throughout the history across the globe. While his existence is debatable, There's no denying his hellish mark is imprinted on all of our lives, be it through belief or folklore. Many people believe they have encountered him for real, for better or for worse. What's your thoughts? What do you think? What do you believe?
Me? I think people need... this sort of idea that people need something to blame when things go wrong is quite powerful.
Yeah.
Especially when times people, you know, something would go wrong and need an explanation for it. It's the so-and-so of this that lives in the other side of the mountains or something. You need something to... It gives people solace.
Okay.
I think that's pretty important.
Yeah.
In small communities as well. I think you need to pull people together, especially when people are suffering.
Yeah. We said poor people?
Pull.
That's a bit... Pull. Yeah. P-U-L-L. Yeah.
But the Christian version of Satan, Lucifer, whatever we're going to... is really quite cool. I like the story of the fallen angel side of things, which I know is sort of loosely referenced in Good Omens as well, but it's not the same. But
yeah,
it's really interesting.
All of our religious culture comes from TV.
It certainly didn't come from RE lessons in school.
No,
did it?
Right. The first story is called "Haunted to Death." Ready?
That's a great title.
Thank you.
Sounds like that'd be like a Motorhead song.
It's not.
Haunted to Death.
No, it's anyway. Not a Motorhead song. Okay. Are you calm?
Yes, I'm always calm.
You can tell I work with young people with autism and stuff. Are you calm? Have you got your stress rings?
Just for reference, I'm neither a young person nor am I autistic.
I mean, you're not old.
No, but...
Okay, here we go. Haunted to Death. Richard Cabell lived in the 1600s. His home was in Brook Manor in the county of Devon, and he was the local squire. By all accounts, Cabell was a monster. He was abusive and beat his wife so savagely to the point where she fled for her own life. The terrified woman fled across the wet moors with her husband in hot pursuit. The tale tells that Cabell caught up with her eventually and in a fit of rage murdered her and their poor dog, which is the real crime.
Yeah, absolutely.
Exactly, we don't care about the one.
Well, I mean, it's unpleasant that she got murdered.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, but poor dog.
Mm.
It's said that the unfortunate canine haunted Cabell for the rest of his life.
Serves him right.
But why was Richard Cabell so full of darkness? It was because he once made a deal with the devil. Through his deal, he was granted immortality. He became so infamous that he is known to be the inspiration behind Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's Hound of the Baskervilles.
I do wonder if that's where we're going with this. Okay.
It is indeed.
Wonderful.
But Richard Cabell did not live forever. Shock. Instead, he died on the 5th of July, 1677, haunted to death by a so-called vengeful pack of ghostly hounds. It is said that when Cabell was laid to rest in his family tomb, that the same pack of phantom hounds came baying across the moors with the intention of howling at the grave. On the anniversary of Cabell's death, you might spy his ghostly figure stalking the moors. It was a common sight, according to the townsfolk. The terrified locals built up iron bars around the tomb and placed a huge slab of stone on top. But even these precautions were in vain. There were reports of a strange red glow emanating through the bars. Some would even swear blind that every year a whole host of demonic creatures will gather at the grave, trying to revive Cabell's promised soul for their master.
Hmm.
Little thing to wet your whistle there.
Very much so, yeah. That was cool.
This next story is called Dude's Got Epilepsy.
I feel like you've drastically changed the tone there. I wasn't ready for that.
Ready?
Yeah.
Right. I mean, no disrespect here at all, but obviously back when this story was written, people obviously didn't have the medical knowledge that we do now. So in my opinion, this is a medical condition. People didn't understand it. Just to say that before I read this. Okay?
I mean, the title sort of did suggest that. Okay, yeah, fair enough.
Ready? It was May 1788. Reverend Joseph Easterbrook had just been alerted to one of the strangest cases he'd ever heard of. It was this of George Lukins, a man who claimed to be possessed by the devil. He was first approached by Mrs. Sarah Barber, one of his parishioners. She had been visiting the village of Yatton in Somerset. Sarah used to live there, but hadn't returned for many years, On arriving there, she ran into her old friend, George Lukens. But the man that she'd known so well was not himself. George had been an upstanding member of the community. He was a reliable tailor and had been a good child of character, a regular churchgoer and all-round good guy. But Sarah learnt a few years ago George's demeanour had shifted. His nature had changed dramatically. Sarah told the Reverend Easterbrook that she had seen George suffer several fits during her stay, where he had sung and screamed in various different sounds that did not resemble a human voice.
Ooh.
Everyone was concerned about George, and he had been placed under the care of a prominent surgeon by the name of Smith. Many other medical professionals had visited George, hoping that they may be able to cure him. All was in vain. Even George, in thoughts of particularly violent fits, cried out that no doctor could do him service. The village was convinced that George was bewitched. He himself confirmed that he was possessed by 7 devils. Upon hearing Sarah's story, the Reverend requested that George Lukens pay him a visit. And he did just that. I have to say, if I was struggling with devils and stuff, I'd hope the holy man would come to me. You know?
I know what you mean.
Sort of be like, now I've got to travel, like, miles and
yeah.
Whilst being tormented by devils. Could have thought old Easterbrook could have just like gone to him anyway.
Yeah.
So the Reverend meets George and he begins to make notes. And his notes begin and they state, George made the most horrible noises as his body convulsed. Poor George was having up to 9 fits a day, leaving him weak and emaciated. When the Reverend would recite religious texts to him, George would writhe in pain. An article appeared in the local paper describing how George would declare in a roaring voice that he is the devil before singing a jolly haunting tune.
Oh, a jolly one, though.
Yeah, a jolly one. Good. His afflictions were so apparently violent that an assistant was needed at all times to restrain George to stop him from causing himself or anyone else injury. On the 13th of June, Easterbrook and several of his colleagues met with George in a vestry room of the church, and the men began to sing hymns, and immediately George began to convulse in agitation.
Not a fan, then?
No. His fits deepened and his limbs jerked more and more violently. Then his head snapped up and he stared straight into the eyes of the other men. In a deep, hoarse voice, he spoke.
I will never quit this man. Any attempt to help him, and he will only suffer torment 1,000 times worse for it.
Apparently the devil's Danny Dyer. I don't know why.
Just go with it.
He began to sing, boasting of his power, shamelessly blaspheming and vowing vengeance on anyone that tried to save poor George. The men around him were not deterred and continued to sing and pray. Other voices were emanating from George, all different kinds, all growling horrific warnings. Then a voice, stronger and mightier than all the others, broke through the noise.
I am the great devil.
It boomed, and George convulsed so hard that 2 men had to hold him down. Why, bellowed Reverend Easterbrook, why must you torment him so? George's lips twisted into a cruel smile.
So that I may show my power amongst men, he replied.
George's small, weak body continued to twist and fit. I command you, bellowed the Reverend, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, depart from this man. The other men echoed his words and prayed hard. George's agony grew stronger. Then, with one terrible, miserable cry of pain, he was suddenly delivered. His body twitched and then relaxed. The devil had seemingly departed. George Lukens, apparently lost forever to the Dark Lord's power, was now cured. Now, my thoughts on this, right?
Oh, okay.
Obviously, it's a very old story, and people would not have understood epilepsy.
Absolutely.
I work with a few people with epilepsy. It's obviously very unpleasant for the person when they're having a fit.
Yeah.
And when they do have a fit, they do make these noises.
Yeah.
Which are, if you've not heard them before, is quite unsettling. Obviously, the poor person can't help it, but the first time I heard it, it is quite traumatizing to hear.
Yeah.
You know.
And I imagine unhuman, normal
sounding.
Yes,
it doesn't sound natural at all. And of course, back in those times, everyone was very, very religious, and it was an opportunity to showcase the power of God, wasn't it?
Well, it was the most viable explanation they probably had.
Exactly.
Realistically,
so,
I mean,
I'm wondering if this poor man had epilepsy and was making these noises, and they sort of decided it was the devil speaking out of him, and this voice that was supposed to speak out of him might have been slightly fabricated, I imagine.
Well, possibly in the retelling, you mean?
Yeah.
But also the gentleman himself would have known the same sorts of stories, would have heard the same kinds of things.
He would have thought he was possessed as well.
In exactly the same way, when people go through other traumas, they link it to other cultural things they've experienced in their life.
Yeah.
In more recent times, people will relate things to, oh, I felt like I was in a film, or I was in a computer. People will say things related to what they know.
Yeah.
And that's a reference point. Yeah. And he's doing the same thing there. Although they will say also, the demon sounded really insecure.
Yes.
What are you doing it for? I just want to show off.
Yes. I've got a big willy.
Except I don't, because I'm a demon. Oh, great. Well,
but you're right. I mean, like when I've thankfully never had a seizure, touch wood, but I've fainted a few times, and that's freaking weird. You feel like you slip off into some other dimension when you faint. So yeah, I mean, goodness knows what it feels like to have a seizure. But yes, I mean, for me, that's quite clearly a poor man has very, very bad epilepsy.
Mm.
And then they sort of went, well, he's cured now, because God's gonna, but I imagine he wasn't cured at all.
But there's no record after
there's no record. No, they cured him.
Right. Okay.
Yep.
Let's hope so.
Anyway, that's my thoughts on that, basically.
Oh, fair enough. Yeah.
There's like the case of Annelise Michel, who is a very famous possession case, and she basically had it. She, poor girl, ended up dying because she had epilepsy, basically.
I see. Okay.
And instead of trying to cure it, treat the epilepsy, they tried to just do endless, what's the word?
Exorcisms.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's what they were doing there.
Yeah. And of course,
they didn't know what else they could do.
There's still places in the world where people don't realize and think people are being possessed, and it's all a bit problematic, isn't it? So yeah, that was my take on the George Lucas story. And we've got one more, and this one's called On the Nose.
All right.
Okay.
Okay. I don't know where to go with that.
In the 10th century, England was safeguarded by St. Dunstan. He was a pious and charitable clergyman who held many important positions throughout his life. By the time of his death in 988, he had served as the Archbishop of Canterbury and had completely reformed the monastic life.
Okay.
If you don't hate him enough already, he was also a superb artist, harpist and metalsmith. Oh, and he protected the whole country from the devil. What a dick. I bet he was really good looking as well.
Well, it wouldn't have mattered if he was a monk.
No, true. But, you know, just in case, you'd be like, oh, and he's really fit.
A beautiful singing voice.
Yeah.
Personality. And he always smells nice.
Yeah. Which is, you know, impressive in the 10th century.
Probably was. Yeah.
It is said that Dunstan encountered the devil many times in his life, but the most famous took place when he was living as a hermit in a cell in Glastonbury. That is the place, not the festival.
I'll take back the smelling nice in that case.
Yeah.
But that's fine, it's fine.
As mentioned before, Dunstan was a talented metalsmith and occasionally accepted commissions, as long as it didn't get in the way of him being holy. Sorry, you can tell I'm slightly taking the piss here, but, you know.
Well, it'd been mentioned he was very pious. This is all in line with that.
I'm being pious with him. One day...
Okay.
No, is that right, pious?
I'm not sure, but that's fine.
I'm being a wise ass. That's what I'm being.
It is what you're being. Yeah.
One day, an old man appeared at Dunstan's window.
Oh, Dunstan,
he croaked in a dry voice.
Would you fashion me a chalice?
I am not busy, replied Dunstan, so I will oblige. He set to work immediately and was so focused on his work that he barely looked up on his guest. When eventually he did, his visitor had changed. In the place of an old man now stood a young boy. Dunstan blinked, and then stood in front of him a beautiful woman. Dunstan blinked again. Of course, now he knew his visitor was in fact the Dark Lord. However, calmly, he bent his head again and continued with his work. Casually, he picked up his tongs and moved them to the fire. He hummed tunefully, and both he and the devil watched the instrument getting hotter and hotter and hotter until they were red and burning.
I mean, at least they both had something in common there.
Yeah.
Oh, burning things. Yeah. Hot stuff. Got it. Yeah.
Then, quick as a flash, Dunstan withdrew the tongs from the flames, lunged forward, and clamped them around the demon's nose. Despite the devil's screams and his writhing body, Dunstan clung on grimly. Eventually, he let the devil go and cast him from his cell.
As he fled, the devil cried, "Woe is me! What has that bald devil done to me? Look at me, a poor wretch! Look how he has tortured me!"
Well, at least he could rhyme, I suppose.
In other versions of the story, this place actually takes place in Mayfield, Sussex. And a pair of tongs is still preserved in Mayfield, and these are said to be the ones that Dunstan pinched the devil's nose with. So apparently we could go into Mayfield is not far from us. We could go and see these tongs if we wanted to. In this version, the injured devil ran all the way to here.
Why? Why did he come here? Why did he come to our flat?
Well, not our flat, but all the way to Tunbridge Wells. What's Tunbridge Wells famous for?
Wells?
Yes.
I really hate when you do this because I don't know what I'm supposed to say.
Wells, yes. He called his he called his nose down in the spring that is down, used to be down on the Pantiles. It's actually not there. It was when I was a kid.
I think it's been built over.
Yeah. Apparently, this is why the water has a reddish colour to it. And it was like, honestly, when I was a kid,
rust coloured.
You could go and drink this water from the Tunbridge Wells spring. And it was absolutely vile.
This town was founded as a health spa in the Regency period, just for anyone who doesn't know.
The water was grim, but apparently it was very good for you, but it tasted revolting. And no wonder if the devil called his nose off in there.
Well, exactly. It's full of, you know, devil bogeys.
Yeah. Devil bogeys. But the devil didn't give up. I think he's a bit obsessed with Dunstan. Years later...
Sounds it, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Got a bit of a thing there.
Years later, Dunstan was virtuously playing his harp in his cell.
Of course he was virtuously doing it.
When he was approached by a tramping vagrant. You'll be amazed to hear that yet again, this was the devil in disguise.
You're the devil in disguise. Oh, yes, you are. Anyway.
Quick, we're not going to get sued.
We're okay.
As we know, Dunstan was a terribly cunning man.
And
as
pious.
Well as everything else, and very pious and very holy.
And he was lovely, yeah.
He seized the devil by the foot and began to... By the foot.
Right.
And began to shoo the beast, furiously nailing a metal shoe into the cloven hoof.
He's a bit of a dick to this guy.
I know. I mean, the devil's just like, hello. And he's like, rah.
I'm just walking through. I'm really sorry. I didn't know you were here. Text me next time.
Oh, my foot.
What are you doing?
Why are you doing this? I never do anything to you.
Who are you?
The devil weeped and begged for mercy, but Dunstan was deaf to his cries. Nail after nail was hammered into his foot.
And everyone, all the onlookers just like, okay. Yeah, it's all right, it's Dunstan.
Please.
He just does this sometimes.
Please, screamed the beast. How it burns. Remove it. Oh, I beg, remove it. I mean, I know it's the devil, but yeah, he was literally walking past. Dunstan looked at him, twirling his hammer in his hands.
Okay, that's not pious. That's maniacal.
Maniacal. I shall consider it, he said. But you must swear that from this moment, you will never pass through a doorway with a horseshoe hanging over it. Keening with pain, the devil agreed. But before Dunstan removed the horseshoe, he quickly went round all the village and nailed horseshoes to everyone's doors, of course.
Everyone was fine with that as well.
Yeah.
Bit of vandalism, it's all right.
Yeah. But just a quick, like, whoop, while the devil was waiting. Then he came and removed the shoe. And this is perhaps why a horseshoe is now associated with good luck and protection.
Okay, I did wonder if that's the direction you go in here.
Famously say often.
Do we?
Yes. Over the threshold, on your mast, be sure a horseshoe well nailed fast. You're always saying that, aren't you?
I basically mutter it in my sleep.
There you go.
Okay, fair enough.
I love that. I mean, again, when I did this concert, there was a snippet of Devil and the Dunsting. With the tongs. Can't quite remember how we did it now. I remember a teenage boy in a dress being the devil. We reenacted it. That, of course, was the version.
This area is really focused on devils and demons.
Yeah, I know. Well, as it said, it was initially took place in Glastonbury, but now there's this link to Mayfield and Tunbridge Wells. I'd like to go and see the tongs. That would be quite amusing.
I'm sure we could take a bus there. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I was in Mayfield not long ago, but it didn't occur to me.
See the magical
tongs? I didn't. And of course, now the Tunbridge Wells spring isn't there anymore. Well, rather like it is, but you can't really get at it.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is a shame because it's like a big piece of history. But did you enjoy that?
I did enjoy that.
Especially enjoyed the Dunstan and the
Devil. There are a huge number of very, very hyper-regional devil stories as yeah. well. Like so-and-so outsmarted the devil. Like they're everywhere. Well, I should try and find some more in the future because there's loads.
The story of Dunstan and the Devil, I mean, the other stories, the devil's really, you know, evil and bloodthirsty and horrific. In the Dunstan and the Devil, he's just a bit like a poor little sort of yes. someone trying to be naughty. But this little dweeb, Dunstan, this little swat who's like just good at everything, like that kid in your class that's yeah. good at everything,
yeah.
just keeps sort of abusing him every time he tries to walk past. I mean, to be fair, yes, he's turning into different things, little boy, a woman. But you know, why is that Warren?
He is a demon.
Why is that Warren having your nose burnt off?
I don't know. Maybe there wasn't much to do in those days.
Mind you, in those days, I think they'd kill a woman if she had her socks up too high or something, wouldn't they? Yeah. So, yeah, I suppose we could shapeshift. To be fair,
if someone shapeshifted in the high street today, I feel like that would... It wouldn't be seen as a busker, would it? Be like,
I wouldn't try and take their nose off or nail something to their foot. I'd sort of go, wow, that's amazing. Can I film you?
Yeah, that's probably true, isn't it? Yeah.
But I feel a bit sorry for the devil in that last one. And I think Dunstan has got a bit of a superiority complex.
He absolutely has. But actually, I do think you're right. There's lots of interesting things about the devil, no matter what they're called, seems to get not quite humanized, but there's definitely a sort of feeling of mistreatment in lots of stories.
Mm.
Like, there's more to it. I find obviously, you know, we all know that the villains are often more entertaining than the heroes.
Oh, yeah, just look at Disney.
Precisely that. But I wonder if this is what partly in Western culture where it kind of comes from, is that Satan or Lucifer or whatever you call him is kind of more interesting as a character
yeah.
than God or Jesus is.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, there's this whole, you know, holier than thou, I can, yeah, do no wrong. And as someone who's not religious, it's more fun to hear about, you know.
Maybe.
Evil deeds and stuff.
I also think that maybe it's just that's the bit that it's the access point for humans because we all know that we aren't perfect.
Oh yeah,
and that's the kind of the embodiment of
except
the
me,
not okay bits. So
I'm perfect.
Well, yes, that's true, but other but people will relate to Satan to some extent, whereas they probably don't relate to God very much.
That's a very good point. That's a very good point, Vincey.
Or you know, whatever part of the world you're in, the names change. The ideology changes, but the basic ideas are similar.
Gosh, and that'd be why like Christians beat themselves. That was like if they do accidentally.
Not all of them do.
Not, but you know, some Christians, if you know, they do something wrong by accident and they're just kind of in distraught about it, which must be not exhausting.
There's parts of Hinduism which do similar.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
In the past,
I'm only relating to like what I know. I'm sure it's the same in other religions. Okay, yeah, so just general religion. If you accidentally, you know, oh my God, I fancy so-and-so, I must be evil. Just sounds knackering.
Yeah, but that's a general. Anyway, we're going way off piece. It's that people want to be good most of the time, don't they?
Well, so. I think what I'm saying is religion can come into conflict with natural human emotion,
yes.
which you can't control. So,
well, is it there to control human tendencies?
Anyway. Yes. And now we're into our atheist sort of beliefs, aren't we?
To some extent, I think it's okay to.
Yeah.
Good question. I think it's all right.
I always say I think people should believe what they like as long as they're not harming anyone else or themselves.
Yes,
that's my thing.
Generally say that's the way to go.
Cool. So I hope you've enjoyed this episode, and I'm very excited for our next film episode.
This next one's going to be odd.
It was a weird one, but very enjoyable. Anyway, I won't say any more.
Spoil it!
All right. If you'd like to get in contact...
tell them it'd be good in case it's pants.
Would you like to tell them how to get in contact? Can you remember our email address?
It's ghostgiguk@gmail.com.
It is ghostgiguk@gmail.com.
I would encourage you to email us.
Or find us on Instagram.
Yeah,
and drop us a message. And thank you to all your sympathy people who saw that I accidentally played... My dad wrote a porno in a lady's toilet on a speaker yesterday.
Well done.
Yeah.
I was proud of
that. I had a lot of messages about that, including from the Weekly Creep, Real Life Ghost Stories and the Haunted UK podcast. So thank you for your support, guys. So do drop us a message if you'd like to say hi, or can, you know, send your condolences for me playing my dad wrote a porno in a lady's toilet, and hope to speak to you all soon.
Yes.
Take care.
Goodbye.
Bye.